Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality. So hello, everybody. Welcome back to Eminent Teachnology. You all have a couple very special guests today. Their names are Dr. Rochelle Newton and Mr. Drew Stennett. We don't have a special guest. We are the special guests. It's been a while since we've just talked and had a conversation, which I do miss. Like, our first few podcasts were really just us talking, which is always great. And while I love all the guests, it's also nice just getting to talk to you, Rochelle. So I'm very excited to get back to, I won't say back to normal, but back to just the two of us having a conversation.
I'm excited as well. Thank you so much. So I thought we would start today by giving our listeners a sense of who we are. And I'm sure they figure out who we are through our talks, but I think I would like to just do a little deeper dive if that's okay with you.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. So if you don't mind, and for you guys listening, I am going to interview Mr. Drew Stennett.
Definitely not a doctor.
But give you a sense of Drew and how we came to know each other and a little bit about Drew. I think that once you get to know Drew, you will be in as much awe and appreciation as I am of Drew. We have some very smart guests that come on our show and they tell us things, but Drew is much too humble to admit it, but he's such a smart young man. And I think the world sits at his feet. He has to grasp it.
Y'all are way too kind, and I'm gonna like highlight this part of the track and just like play it back to myself on days where I'm feeling down and be like, oh yeah, that's right.
Exactly. So let's start. Let me just start with the basics. So Drew, where were you born and where did you grow up? You don't have to get narrow, but just, you know, what part of the United States, places like that.
Yeah. So I was born in a place called Lynchburg, Virginia, which is in central Virginia. Mm-hmm. It's a big, I guess the big thing that they're known for there is Liberty University is there for better or worse. it's an interesting place, but it was a pretty good place to grow up. Mom was a school teacher. My dad is a newspaper man. I don't know if newspaper man is the right word, but he was a photographer and then a reporter and then spent most of his career as a newspaper editor.
Newspaper man.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He was a newspaper man. His dad was a newspaper man. So we have lots of newspaper stuff in our family history. Lived there all through young life and then went to school in Richmond, Virginia.
Wow.
I guess the first time I moved away from Lynchburg.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Where did you go in Richmond? You went to the University of Richmond or VCU?
VCU. So University of Richmond would have been like way too fancy.
So, I resent that. I worked at VCU for a long time.
Oh, did you?
A special place.
I didn't know you were. What did you do over there?
I was the IT manager for what did they call that? Academic and administrative support. So these are the people who supported the people who enrolled the students who got registration and all that stuff. So I was their IT person. I helped them with the structure and to secure what little bit of security we had back then, because security wasn't a big thing.
when did you do that? I wonder if we were there at the same time.
No, we were not. I did this from 1979 to 1982. You weren't even born yet. They didn't know who you were yet.
Well, I was born. That I will give you that. I was definitely not
old, something, but very young. Yes, yes. I married my first husband. We got married at VCU. We actually went to the chapel there and got married at the chapel at VCU.
Really? That is, yeah. God, this is like such a small world. Where did you live in Richmond?
I started out in Henrico County. Mm-hmm. When I lived on my own, I have an aunt that lived in Richmond. She lives on Sims Avenue, which was near Forest Hill, off that way, uh-huh. Forest Hills. And so when I was every summer, I would come up and stay with her because I was living in Walterboro, South Carolina. So I come up and spend my summers in Richmond. And when it was time for me to go away to school, you know, I left Richmond and went to New York. And I got my first real job in Richmond, Virginia. I was in charge of Coca-Cola. There's a bottling plant right there. And a lot of the plants, all they do is collect data, you know, put them in point of sale systems and stuff like that. So that's what I did. I worked with an old tool. I'm sure you don't know what this is, CICS. It's a customer information system. It's one of the early models of a database with text is strapped around it, right? So you collected all the user data and you kind of formatted it. You didn't have to write code, but you had to structure it so that, you know, if the person's name was 45678FF, you had to structure it so it came out alphabetically or whatever. So uh-huh. when they got the massive printouts with those dotted lines, the original agent printers, you know, it had to be right. So, but yeah, I worked for Coca-Cola.
That is awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I did not know that. We have even more in common than I thought we had.
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy. I don't know why I wouldn't have thought that, but yeah, that makes, it's such a small world. Like, and my brother still lives in Richmond, so we still have, it still has a nice place in my heart. Yeah, yeah, he lives in Henrico County now.
Yeah, yeah. I lived in Henrico County for a long time, and what's really interesting is I used to love, as much as it's been in the news lately about these monuments, loved Monument Avenue. It was so wonderful to drive down Monument Avenue and see all these monuments, you know, to go like, okay, so you can't stop unless you get off and park on one of the roads that go in different directions, one way, this way. You know, I hated that part of Monument Avenue, but to see the monuments and to walk up and down, very nice.
Yeah, same here. The last couple years I was in school, I lived in the Fan, so it was nice. Like, it was a beautiful like area. And like at the time, I guess the monuments didn't really mean anything to me the way they do now. And like just seeing them was like, oh, this is so cool. And like, not just the Civil War monuments, but like the Arthur Ashe statue and everything. It was just all so like, so cool. And I definitely did not experience that when I lived in Lynchburg.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, I haven't been to Richmond. So my aunt who I lived with, she died in 1999, I believe. So I haven't been to Richmond recently other than to pass through in a very long time, but I still love the quaintness of Richmond. It's a big city in a small way. You know, if you go down Broad Street, you've seen everything you need to see in Richmond. You go from one end to the other, from Chesterfield all the way to Henrico. You've seen everything you need to see. You don't need to see anything else.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Whenever we go up there, it's like, how do we get there? It's like, you just go down Broad Street. Like, exactly. It's going to be off of Broad Street.
On Broad Street, somewhere off of Broad Street. But it has changed a lot, too. I don't know when the last time you've been there, but it has changed a lot.
Yeah.
Well, what's the part of Richmond with the brick laid streets
Shaco Bottom.
That was my favorite place to go. It was a place to get good food, get out and hang out with your friends, and then to walk down or drive down those cobble streets.
It was it was almost like a place out of time down there too, with those like cobblestone roads and everything. It's just like, what is this? It's like cool restaurants, weird roads, but you know, it's just like right next to downtown Raleigh or downtown Richmond too.
Exactly. It's absolutely amazing. And my daughter was born at Chippenham Hospital. So that'll tell you how long I lived there. She was born in 78, I believe. So it was really a great, great place to live and to have fun. I would like to go back and visit, Churchill. I don't know if you got out to Churchill, but
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Oh my goodness, that's the part, it's probably the more black part. So if you go down Broad Street and head, north, going down in there, it's a lot of old historic black homes. There used to be a big park attached to it. But it was, you know, it's just amazing. Richmond was such a wonderful place to spend time. And I'm glad we have that in common.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have one brother, Patrick. He lives in Richmond, but that's it. He's younger and smarter.
He's got to be really smart if he's smarter than you.
He is definitely very smart.
Excellent. And so you went to VCU, and after you graduated, did you stay in Richmond or did you move somewhere else? Or what were your travels?
So I had a little bit of an interesting travel history, I guess. So when I went to VCU, I went as a theater major. So that was like my primary focus was doing theater stuff. And the last few summers when I was in school, I guess almost every summer that I was in school, I would do outdoor theater for work, like, you know, in between school. Mm-hmm. And I did the Lost Colony for a couple of years in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, which was a blast. And then the last year I did a outdoor theater at a place in Duplin County, North Carolina, which is like an hour north of here, which has an outdoor theater. Big surprise. Did not know that. But at the time I was looking at moving to, so to do theater or film or TV or anything, you pretty much had to go to like New York or Los Angeles, or maybe this little town called Wilmington, North Carolina, that seemed to be growing up. And I was like, well, you know, I didn't really want to move up to New York or go all the way out to LA. Like, they just seemed so far away. But I was like, well, Wilmington, I could do that. Like, that's still, you know, a few hours away from everybody I know, but it's, yeah, it's far enough away that I'm not, you know, living in my backyard. So the Duplin theater thing gave me like a nice experience of, well, I can work here all summer and also sort of like start getting used to Wilmington. And then after the theater ended that summer, then I just moved down to Wilmington and started looking for theater jobs, which I could not, theater or film or TV, which I could not find enough to pay my rent doing. So I started working as a temporary receptionist during the day. And that sort of, it was a weird path, but the company that I worked for was really nice and gave me more training into computer stuff. Mm-hmm. So I just started slowly transitioning from receptionist at, you know, tiny company with 10 people to computer person at tiny company with 15 people. And then found that I really enjoyed doing the Linux type stuff and just sort of moved on from there.
Yeah. That's great. And so how long did you stay in North Carolina? Well, I shouldn't say North Carolina, in Wilmington before you came to where you are now. Did you go somewhere else?
No, we moved right from Wilmington here to Raleigh. I guess I was there for 6 or 7 years, maybe till like 2007 or 2008. After my son was born, we wanted to move somewhere. Like, while Wilmington, so my parents are still up in Central Virginia, and my wife's parents were over towards Charlotte. So we wanted to move somewhere that was like closer to them and more of like a day trip instead of, you know, it's not that we mind either going up and spending the night or having them come down and spend the night, but we wanted it to be like an easier trip, especially with their, you know, grandson being born. So we figured Raleigh was like a nice spot in between where if we needed to go up or they needed to come down or over, you know, we could do that in a day and not make it such a long trip back and forth. Plus, there's a lot more job opportunities here in Raleigh than there were in Wilmington. Like, I loved Wilmington, but, you know, there's the university and a couple pharmaceutical places. And like, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. It has changed a little bit. But yes, that's right. It, you know, it's taken a while to get here. I've been in North Carolina since 1990. Mm-hmm. I have lived here longer than I've lived any other place.
That's awesome. So you must like it then, right?
Well, my husband likes it. I can say that. You know, he was born in Columbia, South Carolina, but he got here when he was like 6 months old. So mm-hmm. this is home to him. So I think that's why we're still here. You know, he used to threaten me, you know, that, you know, we had to spend Christmas with his mom and dad. So, you know, like you, I wasn't trying to drive from California to North Carolina for Christmas to only spend all that time on the road getting from point A to point B. So
yeah, yeah, we ended absolutely. Up in
North Carolina. But I like North Carolina. You know, there's still parts of it I have not seen, you know. So I don't think I've been to the Outer Banks. I've been to Care Beach. Mm-hmm. I've been to Wilmington. What's the other one? I can't think of it. But anyway, but you know, I've seen parts of my father-in-law used to have a house in the mountains in Boone, so I've been to Boone. We've been to Lake Lure, you know, parts. Yeah. But you know, for the most part, I have been pretty stationary right here in RGP. And even with RGP, I don't go too far out of Durham unless I go to the farmers market in Raleigh, occasionally to the fair, but really not too far than that.
What got you to North Carolina in the first place? Was it your husband or did you come here before that?
I came before that. So that aunt I told you about that lived in Richmond, I was at the time I was working for IBM and I was up north. I was in upper New York. And she ended up having to have both of her breasts removed because she had cancer.
Oh no.
She had cancer that had spread and metastasized. So she needed someone to come. She had two grandchildren, a grandson and a granddaughter. But I don't think either one of them were as structured and stable as I was. In other words, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So she needed somebody to help care for her. So I told them I wanted to move to Richmond. Of course, there was no job for me in Richmond. So they moved me here and I worked for IBM and RTP. At the time, they had seven IBM locations that were scattered throughout the Southeast United States. And so my job was to consolidate those people and get some of our, so Token Ring was hot at that time, you know, SNA was falling out, system network architecture, if you're not familiar with SNA, but all these things were falling out. So we had to figure out how to get them there. But IBM really had put a footprint on the earth about networking on mainframe computers. They really understood, you know, that. So Okay, so I because I didn't know anything about it, one of my favorite stories to tell people is when I was coming driving down. So they moved me from up there down, and so the movers came before we got here. And so when you come in off of I-85, are you familiar with I-85?
Oh yeah,
coming from Richmond.
Yep.
So you know how it forks, and you can go. It says go to Raleigh this way or down I-85. My dumb self went the fork down US-1, and like 6 weeks. Every time I tell people that story, I say, "You're not very smart, are you?" Like, "Oh, I've never been there before. I didn't know."
No, I wouldn't know either.
You know, I'm like, "Who's? How do you know which one?" But anyway, so people said, "Well, if you stayed on I-85, you eventually got there." I'm like, "All righty," but there's no sign that said that. You know, so that's one of my favorite stories. But yeah, that's how I got here. So with your job in Wilmington, you said they started exposing you to technology. What grabbed your attention? What about it did you like in what you were doing?
So I think the thing for me that I liked was when I was growing up, and I talk about this with my dad, oh, not a lot, but we've mentioned it a few times. Like, I think one thing that our family does really well is put things together. So like when I was always amazed that whenever like the lawnmower at home would die or something would break, my dad's not like great with his hands, but he could always fix that stuff. And I would just be like, well, how do you like fix a lawnmower? Like that seems so crazy to me. Like, what would you do with that? And he's like, well, it's just, you know, it's just a bunch of things connected to other things. Mm-hmm. And you just have to figure out what connects where. And like, you'll know right away if it doesn't work. And it's all sort of like a flow, right? Like, you have to connect, and again, I don't know anything about lawnmowers, but you know, connect this hose to this piece of motor, and then you get that working. And then if that doesn't work, you connect this to that. And that always really stuck with me with computers, because it was like, well, how do you set up a computer? Well, there's a bunch of cords that you put together, and you know, there's one for the mouse, there's one for the power cable, there's, you know, one for the keyboard, there's one for the monitor. And you just sort of start connecting things until it all works. And if a piece breaks, it's really easy to sort of go in and say like, oh, you know, my mouse isn't working. Number one, is it plugged in? Like, that's a big thing. Is it plugged into that, into the mouse cable and that, you know, something else? So when I was working as a receptionist, I sort of had those like, I wouldn't call them like ideals, but those concepts sort of baked in. So when they were one day, they said, you know, and I still remember this, they were like, hey, we got a bunch of new like desktop computers in. We really don't want to have to pay this like computer consulting company $1,000 to come in and plug them all in. Can you just do it? And I was like, yeah, well, yeah, like I know how to plug things in. That's totally fine. Yeah,
right.
and it just sort of started there. I was like, oh, well, if I know how to plug computers in, maybe I can figure out how they work, you know, underneath those things. And I think a lot of those concepts still apply. Like, it's not a physical wire that you're plugging in somewhere, but it's one piece of software that feeds another piece of software, or, you know, one thing in the kernel that feeds, you know, something in user land and vice versa. And just sort of all of those little concepts just sort of came together for me. And I was like, oh, well, I can do computers if I know how to, you know,
yeah,
really just like attach pipes. It's like, I mean, I feel like a plumber in a lot of ways, is I'm just figuring out where these pipes go and making sure that they don't get clogged up and that they're connected to the right thing.
That's wonderful. And so eventually with that skill, you started learning more and more technology skills until you got to the super guru you are today.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was, so I started out doing all Windows stuff, which was fine, but it wasn't, I guess the Windows stuff didn't really excite me. So in my spare time, and also because I had like no money, I would use Linux because Linux is free. Like, you know, if I wanted to run a web server, me as like, you know, a barely employed, you know, recent college graduate, I could not buy a Windows license. Like, that is not,
right,
you know, I wouldn't be able to eat that month if I bought a Windows license. So I started using Linux just because it was free. And then that's really got my, I think the free part of it really, really kept my attention. So I started doing that in my spare time. And then when the first company I was working for shut down, I was lucky enough to find another Linux, or a strictly Linux job in the same area that did just like a little bit more, you know, like I just had to do a tiny bit of Linux. And then the next job did even more Linux. And then the next job did even more. And then like all of a sudden, it's like I'm doing Linux all the time. And then, you know, you blink an eye and it's like, oh, well, now I've been doing like all Linux for 20 years.
Right. considering you're only 15 years old right now, 20 years is a long time to get to 50.
Yes. Yes.
Pack it in there, you know.
Yes, I like it. Exactly. Tell my bald head that, please.
I don't think that has anything to do with age. I think gray hair, so you see all this white hair, that's what it has to do with age. Hair loss or hair growth doesn't have anything to do with age. I think that's gray.
At least that's true.
Speaking of that, I want to tell you something I found out the other day. So I'm always Googling things to find out why things is this way or that way. Uh-huh. So I want to know why certain parts of my hair were turning whiter sooner than other parts of my hair were turning whiter.
Uh-huh.
So what I learned is the hair follicle is made of melanin. You know, no matter who are your, regardless of your ethnicity, the hair follicle is melanin. And as you get older, that melanin follicle dies and the hair turns white.
Interesting.
And not know that, you know, I'm like, wow, that's pretty deep right there, you know. But also what I learned is baldness is also a dying of hair follicles, and really, really smart people go bald quicker than non-smart people. And that's really something I learned in my Google. So you should Google that.
I will. I'm not even going to Google it. I'm just going to assume that's a 100% fact and tell all of my friends.
But I mean, you know, so there's a lot of publications out there by NIH and other people about hair and melanin. And I was just really surprised about that because I didn't know that's what that was, you know, like why, or for example, dark spots. I don't know if you have them, but like I have dark spots all over my face and just about everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's melanin, you know, a lack of melanin in that place, wherever that spot is.
That's interesting.
And you know, a lot of people go get theirs burnt or colored them or something, but they come back. Yeah. It's not like they're gone forever, you know, so, okay.
That's crazy. I have no idea.
Aging process.
It is so weird. Like aging is just awful, but you know, everybody got to do it. Pretty much everybody has to do it. You're lucky if you get to do it, I guess.
I don't know what the logic is behind it, but you know, I do think it's important that you do it.
Yes. Yes. I had no idea melanin had anything to do with hair. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I didn't know. I did not know that either. I'm putting something here. This is just a very generic one so that you can read it. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there about it. If you start Googling things, you find out more information than you want to know.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So, yeah. So I was like, okay, I didn't need that much information. But okay, thank you for that. You know, so, you know.
Awesome.
You know. But anyway, so you're in North Carolina. You are now a first-rate technologist, and you have been in this field now for several years. Mm-hmm. Tell me this, where are we going? Where is technology going?
That's a great question. So I think it changes probably every few years. I feel like right now, a lot of technology, and this has probably been the case for a pretty long time, is moving these things to cloud services. So for a long time, all of our infrastructure ran like in somebody's closet or in a giant data center with, you know, tons of servers eating up tons of CPUs and everything. And nowadays, like things like the cloud, you know, AWS, Azure, Google Compute, DigitalOcean, like it is so easy and also cost effective to run things, you know, not on your own. It's almost like a no-brainer. Like data centers are hard to run. They're expensive to run. And like, unless you're somebody like IBM or Google, you're probably not running it as efficiently as someone that does data centers all the time could run. So running things in the cloud, I think, is really part of the future. The other thing that I really like is infrastructure as code, which I feel like we're slowly getting towards, which is, you know, the traditional way to build, we used to build servers, right? We used to have a physical server that we would put a disk in and boot it up and install. Then we moved to VMs. The VMs are nicer because you can sort of do all that in an automatic way. And now with infrastructure as code, you can define how you want your infrastructure to look just, you know, in a standard file in a Git repository somewhere, and then have orchestration to take what you have described and just make it happen. So if you say, you know, I want 30 servers in Azure, that, you know, number 30 is right next to the number colon how many servers.
Right.
You throw it in, boom, everything automatically happens in the background. You got 30 servers. You want 300? Add a zero to it. Now you have 300. And that's the stuff, at least to me, that's the stuff that's like really exciting because it takes all of the boring work out of my job. Like, I don't like watching, I don't want to sit in front of a computer and watch the install bar go through. Like, that is definitely not interesting to me. That's, I would rather
that's the new form of paint drying.
Right. Exactly. Like, it's, you know, I feel like I could be doing a million better things with my time than watching or even waiting for a server to install. I want to hit a button and then I want it to be up. And I would like to spend my time like describing how I want it to be, making it repeatable, doing those automation bits, which I believe are the more interesting part. And I think the more rewarding part as well.
Yeah, that makes perfectly good sense. Yeah. So where do you see the weaknesses in technology, specifically with the thoughts that, you know, technology is advancing or evolving faster than you can hire and keep people up to speed in this area? And where are the areas where there are weaknesses where people could look to find to either retool their skills or maybe redirect themselves? Is there areas that you think that are better or areas that need work or something, anything?
So I think there's a couple spots. So security, number one, everything always needs more security. Nothing is ever secure enough. Like, for better or worse, there's always security holes. They're going to be really hard to find. And the more people looking for them, the better. So I think there's always a spot for that. One other spot that I think is an interesting hole, and I'm not sure how we fill this hole, but having the concept of these full stack developers. So a lot of times people spend their careers saying, hey, like, I'm Drew, I'm just going to do like Linux server work. I'm never going to look at a front end ever. And then you have front end people that say, hey, I'm just going to do front end stuff, but I'm never going to look at a Linux server ever. And you have a database person that says, I love databases, never going to look at the front end or the back end. Those are just, you know, concrete lines that I never want to cross. And I think what the people that I like working with most are those people that can really like cross those lines and say like, hey, you know, my job is a front end developer, but I can look over and see that there's something wrong with the OS, and I can, you know, troubleshoot it. I can see what's going on with it. It's not just a complete, invisible thing to me. So having people that sort of know each of those steps, I think, is important. And if I were restarting my career right now, I would probably focus on not just one thing. Like, I don't just want to learn PHP. I don't just want to learn Ruby. I don't just want to know the inner workings of the Linux kernel. I would want to get proficient enough with all of those to understand how they work, and then maybe focus more down the line on getting them to work. But just with and again, I'll throw the cloud out there as an example. Like, you sort of have to know all that when you're doing cloud stuff. You have to know the operating systems. You have to know at least how the front ends operate. And you have to be able to sort of glue all of those pieces together.
Yeah, that makes perfectly good sense. So the last part, I know we're running out of time. I'm surprised you haven't told us we're running out of time.
See, you get me talking too much and then I stop looking at the clock. I didn't even notice.
I think it was just a matter of time before you told me we were extending our time. But I just want to ask you about you and I and mm-hmm. about Duke. So I came to know you through my numerous calls to OIT about problems I was having in the uh-huh. hospital, specifically after my colleague left and went to work for Big Duke. So one of the things that I often tell people about somebody asked me not too long ago, how did you and Drew decide to do a podcast together? I said, because she's so smart, I need somebody to talk to. But, you know, one of the things I actually remember very much about you is that you would bring technology education to us. Yeah. We didn't have to go and say, hey, Drew, can you teach us how Docker works or GitHub? Or you would bring it to us. Mm-hmm. And that's an amazing skill. And my question is, so before I was bothering you, were you thinking about doing this for other groups in other areas, or was it just me being a pain in the butt and you just want to get me out your hair?
No, not at all. So there was, first off, you're never a pain in the butt. I always love doing that stuff. I don't think, so I had done like a little bit of that with some, we'd had some other departments that we wanted to reach out to just to sort of like, I think when you work at a big place like we do, it's hard. Like, people get in their sort of tunnels and just sort of do their thing. And it's not that they're trying to keep their work to themselves, but, and also being technology people, everybody's really shy. And it's hard to be like, hey, we have this cool thing over here. We've been using it like on our own for years, but I don't really want to like go and tell people about it. Cause what if they ask questions that I don't know, or like, you know, what if they break something, or what if now I've got to spend all my time explaining how this works? So like people have a tendency to just sort of like hoard things. Mm-hmm. So being a theater major, bringing it back around to theater stuff, I like talking to people. So I've been going out to a couple groups and just sort of doing the same thing like I did with y'all, which would be like, you know, and traditionally the group would be like, hey, we don't know anything about blah. Can you teach us about blah? And I would say, okay, let me go find a person that does blah and take them over there. I think y'all were a bit more open. And it may have gotten to the point where I was just bringing not random people, but, you know, totally new people over. And I think also, so I do like talking to people, and that was a really, and it's still like a rewarding part of my job is, you know, if I don't know a lot of stuff I know about and I can just go talk about, but if I don't know about it, I've got a pretty good chance of knowing somebody in central IT that does know about it. And I like, it's nice taking somebody over there. It's nice seeing people like meet up and then like those people talk later. That was something that's sort of weird. It's like, oh, y'all are still talking? Like, that's great. Like, I feel really good about that. So it was sort of like personally rewarding, I guess. It's just sort of making those types of connections. And I think before we started getting together, like, I really didn't know anything about y'all's department. Like, I knew like nothing about it. And so it was really interesting for me to be able to see what y'all do and meet all the developers and, you know, sort of, I don't know that we ever had any like the perfect solution as this, but at least exposing options and things like that. I don't know. I guess the long story short is I just sort of like the connecting piece I really like. And I find that a very rewarding piece of the job.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we're going to end, but I want to end with this. I think that people should take away from our work together pre-podcast and all the other things is people from very divergent, different backgrounds can find commonality without judgment, without any kind of thought of I've got to infiltrate or I've got to change myself because I'm dealing with this person. So I am an older Black woman and you are a younger white man. We have our very narrow lane. So you over here and I'm over here. We are very good friends and we can disagree. We can have different viewpoints about things. We can see the world differently, but we don't bring judgment to our relationship. You know, if you say, Rochelle, you've become very forgetful lately. You don't penalize me for that. You know, or if I say, Drew, you're talking too fast. I don't understand. Slow down and repeat that again. Yeah. I don't penalize you for that. This is just the way you are. This is the way I am. And what I hope people get from our podcast and from these discussions that we have, one, we want to enlighten people. We want people to learn and to grow. And I think you talked about that where you like connecting people and helping them. And that's really why we came together with this podcast for me anyway, because there was this part of you that you were always bringing these experts to us. You were always raising new topics that we hadn't thought about or whatever. And that's really important in a society that is fractured as we are right now.
Yeah.
If people can learn anything from these podcasts and anything from us, it is that differences does not mean an obstacle or impediment to furthering your relationship. I learn from you. I get to know great things. I hope you learn from me. I hope that our dialogue and our collaboration shows people that the most different backgrounds still have that 6 degrees of separation.
Oh, yeah. The VCU is a perfect example of that. That's And I'm glad you say that too, because a lot of times, sometimes I'm like, oh, Drew, are you just like sucking all this knowledge out of Rochelle and not giving anything back? Because, you know, like a lot of like, I mean, I feel like I say this like every podcast, but I learned so much from you. It's always amazing. And this, our relationship, while it's very different, I mean, we come from very different backgrounds. I think that is a good, like, it's a good compliment to each other. And like, it's, I feel like I've grown a ton as a person talking to you through all this. And I don't think that would happen. I mean, it wouldn't happen if you were, you know, another, you know, white guy colleague that had a you know, my exact same background. So I think it's very rewarding in both ways.
I agree. I do think that there is value in all, right? So like we have lots of white male colleagues that are brilliant people. We enjoy spending time with them. We learn, you know, we had Andy on the show. We learned how to eat mm-hmm. carrots. You know, we learn and we continue to learn. And I think those are the kind of things that are necessary to, you know, seam together our fracturedness, you know, to bring us back to the whole, because I'm not asking you to be a Black man. I'm not asking you to assume my identity, to be a part of my community, you know, in places where you don't feel comfortable. I'm mm-hmm. asking you to be a part of my community. So wherever you are, you're good right there. And wherever mm-hmm. I am, I'm good right there. And we come together in community, whether we're with white colleagues, Black colleagues, orange colleagues, brown, whatever they are, that we bring together a common purpose. And that's to make each other better and to make the world better. And that to me is a part of this podcast. This podcast is our attempt to show differences, my opinion, differences, mm-hmm. and then to show that you can overcome almost anything. You don't have to have these things. We probably wouldn't listen to the same music. We wouldn't play the same video games. I still play Ms. Pac-Man. So, you know, that's as far as I've gotten in the video game world. So that's my skill, you know, but yeah. that doesn't affect our relationship. You know,
yeah.
you know, I could probably teach you some things about Ms. Pac-Man. You could probably teach me some things about PlayStation or Xbox. But,
yes.
You know, my son keeps telling me to press the X. I don't even know what that means. I'm on my keyboard pressing the X and nothing happens.
Yes.
I know. But that's really, really important. I think it's really important that you bring together people who have different backgrounds together for a common purpose. And that's to make each other better. If you don't make each other better, you're really wasting your time.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think that's a perfect statement to close on. That's perfect, Rochelle.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I am always happy to be with you and to talk with you. And I want to tell our listening audience, we have so much coming for you as we move toward the summer. You're going to hear more from just Drew and I. You're going to hear guests that we'll have. We are doing a better job of promoting ourselves on social media and other resources. We are still learning this, but we are glad you're here. If you like what you hear, subscribe, provide us comments and feedback. You know, we want to learn and grow with you. So, you know, we hope that you'll use this resource as a way to grow.
Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.